Gildan Media presents Your Coach in a Box, affordable, life-changing audio programs.
Persuasion. The Art of Getting What You Want. Written and read by Dave Lacani. Preface. Leave me penniless and naked in any town in America, and by the end of the day I'll have clothes, food, lodging, a way of earning an income, a following, and enough money in my pocket to start again. Why? Because I know exactly how to persuade people to do what I want them to do for both of us to achieve our goals. Virtually every element of human interaction involves some level of persuasion, but particularly sales, negotiation, copywriting, advertising, and media relations. Many scholars, philosophers, and scientists have explored the process, yet few get it right consistently. They dismiss the fundamental survival requirements of persuasion. They've analyzed it as a process that can be used if necessary, but don't understand that persuasion isn't a tool we use optionally. It is one that we're required to use in order to survive. The essence of life itself is persuasion. How well we persuade ourselves, how well we persuade those around us, and how we ourselves are persuaded by those who persuade us. This audiobook began with my first study of the persuasion process more than 24 years ago and has continued to develop since then. Throughout the book, I demonstrate how persuasion works in person, in the media, in advertising, and in sales. I also demonstrate specific steps you can take to develop your persuasiveness, charisma, and ability to influence others in order to get what you want. I show you how to incorporate the process into your everyday life so that you're able to influence and persuade effectively and unconsciously. It will become as natural as speaking or walking. This audiobook is different than any book you've read about persuasion, sales, or negotiation. The differences are profound in several ways. First, it's not my intention to scientifically break down why people make the decisions they do and the psychological methodologies for creating change in people. What I do is demonstrate in the first section the difference between persuasion and manipulation. The second portion of the book focuses on the key areas and elements involved in rapid persuasion. My only real interest, and I believe yours as well, is to persuade fast. Therefore, I believe the best way to do that is to give you an overview of the elements and a description of why it is important to you, and then dig right into how to make it work for you. I'm not going to bother you with a lot of arcane references, only those most appropriate to your success. Finally, in the third section of the book, I demonstrate the persuasion equation, which ties it all together and gives you a practical format for quickly persuading anyone. This portion of the book has been described as dangerous and genius alike by those who have attended my seminars and speaking engagements. Quite simply, the persuasion equation demonstrates how to apply every technique you learn in the second section of the book in order to move people to your position or to take the action you want them to take. People think it is genius because of the simplicity of the program and dangerous because it is also the very same process you use to manipulate another person. Your intention will ultimately determine whether you've persuaded or manipulated, and if you decided to manipulate someone, whether it was appropriate. Ultimately, only you can make the judgment call. Interestingly, whether you are persuading as a profession or just need to get a date with the perfect man or woman, the process that I teach you will work perfectly. I've broken down a few areas that I think you'll find very valuable. For example, I've included sections on writing, negotiation, advertising, and selling. Those sections will help you understand how to use the process in a very specific professional persuasion situation and to improve your ability in each. I began studying persuasion for a rather unusual reason. I was raised by a brilliant single mother who wanted the very best for my brothers and me. Mom was literate, creative, well-spoken, motivated, and focused to get a better life for all of us. So she decided to raise us in a religious cult. Before I explain why that led to my study of persuasion, let me tell you a bit about this unique cult because it really was the impetus for my very thorough study of persuasion, manipulation, and influence. When I say religious cult, I'm not talking about a mainstream fundamental Christian church, quite the opposite, in fact. Although there was a fundamental belief in God as Savior, that is where the similarity to traditional religion ended. They believed that women had very little value in society beyond giving birth and caring for their children, their home, and their husbands. Education was strongly discouraged. Boys were to be out of school by the 8th grade at the latest, and many young women were out of school by 6th or 7th grade, and homeschooled through the years required by the state. There was also no television, no radio, no dancing, no dating outside the church, and no divorce was allowed. Women could not cut their hair, wear makeup, or wear any garment that pertained to a man, pants in particular. and men were required to keep a very short haircut, be clean-shaven, and be the primary breadwinner for the family. Church services were very strict too, Tuesdays, Thursdays, twice on Sunday, and often a Friday night prayer meeting. Services were the fire and brimstone kind, and they often lasted longer than 3 hours. There was no talking, moving, or fiddling around in church either. The deacons enforced that, and any young children who dared disobey, or even to be bored out of their minds enough to fidget, were immediately taken to the back of the church and punished if their parents didn't do it in a timely manner. When it was time for punishment, there was no sparing the rod or spoiling the child. One of my younger brothers suffered terribly during these years. He had what would now likely be diagnosed as attention deficit disorder and has since tested with a very high IQ. The leaders in the church diagnosed him as having the devil in him and prescribed regular beatings to get the devil out of him. I often marveled at the power of the devil in my brother because no amount of beating or other physical punishment could dislodge it. In truth, I hold both my brothers in highest regard and awe for their ability to endure and survive what surely would have ruined if not killed others, and for coming out of it all, well-adjusted and successful. Beating a child so severely and regularly that he often could barely walk would dislodge most devils. You see, it was important to get the devil out, because the Bible believers, as the followers of the end-time prophet William Branham were called, knew that there was going to be a very literal rapture in the very near future, and only those who were Bible believers, like them, could be taken up in the rapture and given access to God's kingdom. Everyone else would suffer in tribulation on the earth until the resurrection, when the dead would rise and everything in the book of Revelation would occur literally, and the largest majority of those left would be hastened to the lake of fire. Sounds almost surreal, doesn't it? Even my condensed version of this story demonstrates obvious problems in logic. But what amazed me most as I grew older was the number of people that accepted this story I've just told you without question. Many of those people were well-educated and from well-adjusted homes, though not all. Day after day, year after year, those very same people willingly gave up much of what they earned to support a minister, to whom many of the rules didn't apply, and a church, all while spreading the good word and attracting even more people to the church and drawing them in systematically until they, too, were completely hooked. I was involved in the church from the time I was 7 years old until I was 16, when I finally made a decision on my own that I'd have to leave the church if I intended to complete my education and if I wanted to stop bringing additional problems home to my family. In order to leave the church, I'd also have to leave home. So shortly after my 16th birthday, I made my intentions known to my mother and to the church and was summarily excommunicated with a prayer to God that he would turn my soul over to Satan for the destruction of my flesh, that I might see the error of my ways, repent, and return to church. I have to laughingly admit, a few times through my life, I've wondered if their prayer was working. The very next day, I moved away from home and retreated to the one place where I'd always found solace, a never-ending source of food for my question-filled brain, the library. At the library, I began studying what exactly drew people to cults, specifically how someone as bright and creative and wonderful as my mom could be convinced that everything she knew and held true was wrong and everything these people said was right, and how I could persuade her that there was a better, smarter, and healthier way for all of us to live. The story I have shared with you is not a story of persuasion, but rather one of manipulation. This is not a book about cults, although I discuss how to create a cult-like customer following. It's not about the negative sort of manipulation that does not create a lasting relationship, although I teach you precisely how to manipulate so you can understand how it occurs and defend yourself from it and ensure you are not guilty of it. In the beginning of the book, I discuss manipulation, how it happens and why it works, for a while. You'll see that many facets of effective persuasion are inherent in manipulation, but it is the subtle differences and outcomes that set the two clearly apart. Ultimately, manipulation always fails, but true persuasion lasts. This is a book about persuasion and the art of using persuasion to get exactly what you want. In getting what you want, you'll also position yourself as an expert in helping others get what they want, and that's the highest form of persuasion. What I found out over those ensuing years, I share with you here because the strategy and tactics I learned for changing minds, for creating winning situations for all, for getting what I wanted, will allow you to quickly and easily get everything you've ever wanted out of life. The strategies I'm about to share with you are not the strategies of the manipulative cultist, but the specific ethical patterns, processes, and tactics you can use to get more of what you want out of this life. By simply understanding the elements of persuasion that must be present for you to succeed, you succeed more often. True persuasion is based in truth, honesty, inquisitiveness, and the ability to tell a good story to elicit the persuasion criteria of those people you hope to persuade so that you can meet their expectations easily. I also show you how manipulation happens and why manipulation is always bad and never works long term, and how to use the positive and very powerful tools of persuasion that instantly change minds and compel people to action to get exactly what you want out of life, just as I have. By learning how to ethically persuade people, I have achieved every major goal I've ever set for myself by being able to quickly and efficiently persuade not only others, but myself. Along the way, I have helped many people whom I have persuaded reach their goals too. I have consistently achieved an income that puts me in the top 3-5% of income earners in the United States. I have been able to get the best jobs, access to the best minds, and access to the very best people, like you, to learn with and support my efforts. I've done more in my 40-plus years than most people will do in a lifetime, and, like you, I have so much more to do before it is over. My mom did finally see the many thinking errors of the church and eventually left about 3 years after I left home. But the pull was so strong and the influence so high that on her deathbed she questioned whether she had made a big mistake by leaving the church. After Mom's death in 1999, I began to ponder deeply what caused her to continue to question her decision even after she saw the error of her beliefs that kept her connected to the church for so long. The longer I thought about the issue, the more I began to think about it in context of business as well. And that thought made me ask this question. Shouldn't your customers wonder if they leave you, if they just made the biggest mistake of their lives? Throughout this audiobook, I demonstrate how you can create a cult-like following of customers who, even if they leave, will always wonder if they made the right decision. That concern, combined with your ethical ability to serve them better, will draw them back, or will keep most of them from ever leaving in the first place. Belief perseverance is a powerful concept we'll explore in much more detail later. If you've ever dreamed that there is more to life than what you're getting right now, if you've ever wanted a raise, a better job, more sales, better deals, better things, the perfect partner, or a better life, I'm going to show you what insiders, the born salespeople, and the true persuaders know. I'm going to show you how to get exactly what you want whenever you want it. I also show you how to avoid the mistakes I made along the way to shorten your learning curve. If you will allow me, I will personally teach you, groom you, coach you, and lead you through a new skill your parents didn't know they should teach you. Isn't taught in any school, and often isn't discussed in polite company, but one that will serve you well for the rest of your life. I will demonstrate how you can master persuasion, the art of getting what you want. Chapter 1, Manipulation. Love comes when manipulation stops. When you think more about the other person than about his or her reactions to you. When you dare to reveal yourself fully. When you dare to be vulnerable. Dr. Joyce Brothers. In the preface of this audiobook, I briefly described the religious cult I grew up in and how it was my impetus to study persuasion. When I began to study, the first realization I had was that while there were many similarities between manipulation and persuasion, the more I studied, the more I realized that manipulation is actually one path to persuasion, but only a temporary persuasion. Not a lasting agreement. The American Heritage Dictionary definition of manipulation, shrewd or devious management, especially for one's own advantage, is most fitting when discussing the difference between persuasion and manipulation. In manipulation, the only person who benefits long-term is the manipulator. Now look at the definition of the word persuade. To induce or undertake a course of action or embrace a point of view by means of argument, reasoning, or entreaty. By persuading, there is the opportunity for two people to come together on an opinion that is mutually beneficial. Manipulation is inwardly focused on the person who is manipulating. The manipulator is focused on achieving personal outcomes and goals with no concern for the outcome or impact on the person being manipulated. Deception or covering up logical factual evidence is also inherent in most manipulation, as demonstration or presentation of the facts would typically allow a rational person to come to a logical decision unfavorable to the manipulator. Manipulation also strives to set an artificial series of conditions or rules that govern the encounter so the manipulation can continue. There are typically penalties for challenging manipulators that can range from more deception to physical and emotional abuse to shrewdly manage you for their own advantage. In discussing manipulation with noted psychologist Angela Daly, she said, "Manipulation, whether positive or negative, is most clearly defined by the intent of the person who manipulates. If I tell a child who brings a bag of cookies from the cupboard before bedtime and who intends to eat them all that they can have one cookie or no cookies at all, and they choose to have one cookie, I've created an illusion of choice, but within the bounds of what I consider acceptable to me. I've manipulated the behavior for the good of the child who needs to get a full night of sleep." In fact, discussion of manipulation with any psychological professional nearly always leads to the conclusion that the only real differentiator between manipulation and persuasion is intent. Robert Greene, author of The 48 Laws of Power, was much clearer in his definition of manipulation. He said, "All attempts to influence are manipulation." Nearly everyone has had an experience of being manipulated at one time or another. For many, a common experience is that of buying a used car. While I certainly do not lump all used car salespeople into the same category, it is an experience that most of us have shared at one point in our life. So let's look at the setup that allows us to be manipulated. Over Sunday brunch, you and your spouse decide it's time for you to buy a new car. You want something newer than you have, but you don't want to spend the money for a brand new model year car. So you eat, you hear those magic words on television from an overweight, mutton-chopped used car salesman. Come on down Sunday, Sunday, Sunday to the car corral where prices are being slashed to the bone because we have inventory we must move. Our loss is your gain, but you must come down today. You are a smart person. You look at your spouse, smile, and say, can't hurt to go down and look since they're having a sale. Besides, there's no way that guy will get me to buy something I don't want. And so the first condition for manipulation and persuasion is met. And that condition is the search for a solution. The search for a solution is very important to the manipulator and the persuader because searchers have lowered their defenses somewhat. They've indicated that they want something they don't have and that they need specific knowledge, products, or services that you do have. The person being manipulated has an open mind to the possibility of what might be. By lowering their defenses and by opening themselves up to the idea that information exists that they are not privy to, but need in order to achieve their goals, searchers willingly allow others to challenge their beliefs and to educate them in new possibilities. They've also set themselves up to be susceptible to the second condition, time sensitivity. Time sensitivity is very important because we have a very acute sense of time. Things must happen quickly, decisions must be made rapidly, and everyone knows that the early bird gets the worm. Manipulators, and again persuaders, know that reinforcing time sensitivity while increasing time pressure pushes people closer to impulsive decisions. It also sets the groundwork for the third condition for manipulation to work, potential for loss. So you walk into the car lot thinking you're in charge, when in reality you're positioning yourself to be led. You meet your car salesman, and in the initial conversation with you, the car salesman demonstrates a very deep knowledge of cars. He is concerned that he understands what your real needs are, so that he can demonstrate the most appropriate choices for you, since there is no way you can know everything there is to know about every car. But he can. After all, that is his job. The fourth condition is met, encounter with a benevolent authority. While all four conditions are ideal for manipulation or persuasion, it is the intent of the person who is doing the manipulating or persuading that will determine what happens to you and ultimately to them and the business. There is one more condition that must be met, and this is critical to success. We'll discuss that condition shortly. In your bad experience with buying a used car, all four conditions aligned, and you were not even consciously aware of how susceptible you were to what would come next. As you shopped, you were likely told about a number of different options, but only one that was right for you. You were assured that no matter what your concern, there was a reasonable explanation as to why it was truly not a concern. Reassurances were given and backed up with technical-sounding information and demonstrations that were plausible, so you decided to buy. This isn't the first time around the car buying block, so when the time comes, you hit them with your offer. The salesman sweats and says there's no way he can sell you the car for what you've offered, so he goes to see what he can do and talks it over with his manager. He comes back with another offer, this one lower than the sticker price but still above yours. He also lets you know at this point that one of the other salesmen has a customer who has already made an offer higher than yours, but has not signed the contract yet. You feel a little nervous and wonder if this is a sales trick. If it is, you will pay too much. If it isn't, you'll lose the car, which is rapidly becoming the perfect car. This process repeats itself several times until finally the salesman comes back with a number higher than you want to pay, but he has some additional things that he'll throw in for you, some new tires and a CD player. It is the best he can do, but you have to act now. If you walk off the lot, either the other buyer gets your car, or you lose all the incentives to buy now. You're smart, though, so you decide to wait. You want to think it over for a couple of hours, so you get them to commit to the price and the options if you call back by close of business, which they do, unless the other car buyer comes back in. Then, there's just nothing they can do. Now, it is late afternoon. The sun is about to sink below the clouds for the day, and you decide that you do want the car. The final condition for manipulation is met. You've fully committed. By committing mentally and emotionally, you've set yourself up for great loss, but you must have the car. The smart persuader and shrewd manipulator already got you to make some small commitments along the way, and those are the ideas that push you over the edge. Sure, there are a few nagging doubts, but it is a good deal, and you've bargained hard. You call back and tell them you want the car, and much to your dismay, it is gone. The other salesman got his customer, who was already willing to pay more, to buy your car. You're dejected. You feel down. That was your car. You wanted it. If only you hadn't waited. Now you have to start the process again, knowing you may have to let the very best deal slip through your fingers. You ask about other cars, and the salesman is very willing to help if you want to come back in tomorrow, so you do. When you arrive at the lot the next morning, you're met by the salesman who has incredible news. Financing fell through for the people who were going to buy your car, and you can get it if you buy it now before they have time to qualify with another higher-risk lender. You're hooked, and you buy the car as is immediately. You don't want to lose this car again. That was just too close. You drive the car off the lot, and the next morning you wonder if you made a good decision. But it is a good-looking car. Even your neighbor said so. A few days later, you begin to notice a lot of little things you couldn't have noticed in a 10-minute test drive. As you begin to make mental notes of what is happening, you start trying to get in touch with the salesman. Your calls go unreturned. You drive it down to the lot and are summarily told that all sales are final and that they will be happy to have their service person look it over. They look it over and you find out that you'll have to spend several hundred dollars to get the car fixed. Now you don't have a choice. If you want the car to work right, you have to fix it. If you don't, you face even bigger, more expensive problems later. And so begins your wonderful new car purchase. You feel cheated, suckered, and wonder how you got sucked in. The good news is that it is not just you who is susceptible to the manipulator. We all are. The easy story, charismatic manner, and the setup are all but irresistible to most people, but that doesn't make you feel any better, does it? In fact, people who are manipulated report feeling angry, hopeless, and not in control. The manipulator, on the other hand, had all needs met. Manipulation works in the short term only because there is a lack of experience, information, or critical thought on the part of the person being manipulated. The moment you begin to critically think about the sequence of events or the occasion where you were manipulated, you begin to see all the warning signs that were present during the interaction. So why didn't you pick up on them? The answer is quite simple. When we are searching for solutions, any solution that seems to work tends to be the correct one. We find ways to justify or force-fit the solution to the problem or desire that we have. Manipulators know that if they show you the solution, the way, the answer to your problem, you will immediately begin to rationalize any objections you have. You'll find a way to make it fit. And the shrewd manipulator will continue to layer on proof, emotion, and increase the pressure to take action now until you do. The 80-20 rule applies very strongly in this situation, says psychologist Angela Daly. It is very easy to negate the 20% of doubt when it is overwhelmed by a more significant sense of desire or evidence, even when the doubt hangs around in the back of your mind. You find ways to justify or rationalize away the doubt so you can move back into your comfort zone. Fortunately, nearly all manipulation is ultimately discovered and the manipulator is exposed. Many people, though, will not share their experiences with those around them. In extreme cases, the media pick up the story and thousands, if not millions, learn of the person and the process and can therefore avoid it. Manipulation does not work in the long run because there can be no ongoing trust or relationship with the manipulator. Deceptions are ultimately exposed and incongruence is observed and reconciled. Many times, legal action of one form or another results. So the manipulators must find another target where word-of-mouth reputation won't catch up or be exposed at such a high level that they lose all credibility. Unfortunately, many people go on to be manipulated again because the perceived value of what they may receive is higher than the pain of being manipulated. Ultimately, the pattern continues, not because they don't recognize the manipulator, but because the risk-reward ratio is high enough to outweigh critical thinking on the issue. I'm going to demonstrate the manipulation process for you so that you can see all of the elements. Please understand that I do not condone manipulation in any form, but do believe it is important for you to know how manipulation works so you do not become a victim and so that you do not unwittingly and unethically manipulate anyone. How to manipulate. Number one, carefully observe your audience. Look for people who are genuinely searching, who are looking for answers, salvation, and yet who are artificially confident or unsure. Two, test their knowledge and their commitment. Find out how interested they really are in you and your subject. Ask a lot of questions. Get them to tip their hand about how much knowledge they really have on the subject. Then offer some information that is not wrong, but questionable or contestable. See if they challenge you in return. Present your information in a way that is sure and confident. Present yourself as an expert. 3. Use broad, sweeping generalities and common knowledge statements that encompass the common knowledge around the subject. Get them to agree with you. 4. Build your relationship, create trust, befriend them, and deepen your rapport. 5. Get them to verbalize their desire and commitment. Put them into a future situation where they have benefited from following your advice. 6. Begin to make them aware of what a great opportunity you're presenting them, but subtly. Build up the emotional desire for the idea you're presenting, but let them understand that this is an opportunity that won't last forever. If possible, take the opportunity away from them once. but through a very reasonable set of circumstances. Give them one last opportunity to get what you are promoting, but make it contingent on making a decision right now. 7. Reinforce your relationship again as they leave. 8. If they start confronting you, place the blame for the problem elsewhere. Blame the boss. Tell them about your very sick grandmother and how you are really out of sorts today because all of the problems she is having and that you have to take care of. Ask if they have ever experienced anything similar and ask for their advice or assistance. Pull them in closer. 9. Continue the process until they are fully committed or until they stop coming back. If they commit, let them into the insider circle, the exclusive group for the ordained ones. Give them access to information or activities that no one else has access to. Help them in little ways when you can so that their reliance on you increases and offer them more opportunities to do what you want them to do. Chapter Review. Intent is the only clearly definable element that separates manipulation from persuasion. Manipulation is inwardly focused on the outcome of the person doing the manipulation. Persuasion is externally focused on developing a win-win outcome where everyone's needs are met. The four most important elements that must exist to manipulate or be manipulated are seeking a solution, time sensitivity, potential for loss, and benevolent authority. Manipulation is effective only in the short term because nearly always the manipulator and the manipulative techniques will be revealed by an outside observer or through critical thinking. Manipulation is nearly always inappropriate in any situation, particularly in business and sales situations. If you want to earn a significant income and have a long career, you'll always avoid manipulation. Remember that short-term manipulation will never lead to long-term success when it comes to influencing people. The world is too small. Manipulators are always discovered. Success questions. What is my intention when I set out to persuade? What examples of having been manipulated in my personal life exist for my critical review? Are there any other differences between, or justifications for, persuading and manipulating? Chapter 2. Persuasion. When I tell the truth, it's not for the sake of convincing those who do not know it, but for the sake of defending those who do. William Blake. This chapter on persuasion is not very long, because it is really a brief follow-up to the previous chapter and an opening for the rest of the work, which is all about persuasion and how to make it work. My purpose for this chapter is to demonstrate that there are some differences between persuasion and manipulation, but they are mostly internal differences, internal to you. You must make a decision before you convince anyone of anything about whether what you are doing is reasonable, ethical, legal, and moral. If the answer to even one of those criteria is no, then you should not do it. Persuasion, when done correctly, is beautiful. It's much like watching a carefully orchestrated ballet. Every part of the process is unique unto itself, yet by necessity, a part of every other. Persuasion is so closely related to manipulation that it is often hard for people to draw a distinct line. Most of the elements of manipulation must be in place for successful persuasion to happen, but the key difference is the intent of the person persuading. In the first chapter, we talked about a bad used car buying experience, and yet nearly all of us have had a good car buying experience as well. In the good experience, the person selling you the car was truly as interested in helping you achieve your needs as you were in fulfilling your needs. Later, we look at the persuasion equation, which shows how you tie all of the elements of persuasion together consistently to achieve a predictable outcome each time you get what you want. Good persuasion is a practiced art, a carefully orchestrated dance between you and the person you are persuading. That orchestration involves understanding the true needs and desires of the person you are persuading, understanding his or her criteria for action, and finally, presenting information in a way that is congruent with his or her indicated desires. Manipulators spend a great deal of time creating a facade, but persuaders create a persona, a carefully crafted part of themselves that allows them to interact with others from a position of power and influence. A persuasive persona is an accepted part of who the person is. They actively and consciously develop that part for the purpose of getting more of what they want quickly and ethically in any situation. The best persuaders are innately curious about the world around them and the people they interact with. They want to know what makes the other guy tick. They are interested in the desires, dreams, and goals of the person they are persuading for the purpose of using those as leverage to be sure, but equally to create a long-term relationship based on mutual respect. Persuasion is as much about learning what the other person needs on a physical level or product as well as an emotional level and why, as it is about providing the right product or service at the right price. The best product or service at the best price presented poorly and in a way that is incongruent with the buyer's needs will often be overcome by an inferior product or price presented persuasively. Persuasion is not just about selling, though. It is also about gaining agreement and support. It is about creating a common ground upon which two or more people can come together in thought and belief. Persuasion occurs in virtually every area of life, from what you have for breakfast to who makes it for you every morning. Virtually every aspect of our lives involves persuading someone, even ourselves, to do the things that we want him or her to do so we can have more of what we want. Persuasion is an art form that improves through practice. No one is born a powerful persuader, though as I write this, my 10-month-old daughter has persuaded me to stop in mid-sentence and give her what she wants without saying a word. In order to be an effective persuader, you must take the time to learn about what makes people make the decisions they make. Fortunately, by the time you finish this audiobook, you'll have learned all you need to know to be effective in persuading in any situation. However, simply listening to this audiobook won't be enough. You'll have to analyze your current persuasion process and yourself to see where you can improve. You also need to determine where in the process you overlay the principles that you're about to learn. Finally, you need to practice. You have to test the insertion of certain techniques or ideas into your current presentation process and study the feedback to understand how to use them more effectively for the fastest and best results. Chapter Review. Persuasion is about creating an environment that lets two or more people find common ground in belief. The fine line between persuasion and manipulation revolves around intent. Connotation also has a lot to do with how each of the two events is interpreted. Typically, persuasion has a very positive connotation, while manipulation does not. Success questions. What are my personal beliefs about when something is persuasive and when it is manipulative? How have my beliefs about the two supported me or held me back to date? How can I become more curious about the world around me and challenge my beliefs to come up with a broader knowledge and experience base from which to launch my persuasive arguments?